Welcome to This Week in Lotus. The weekly roundtable discussion of all things social, collaboration, technology and community. Here's your host, Stuart McIntyre.
This Week in Lotus, episode 105, recorded on Friday, 20th July, 2012. How do you do that without reinventing Clippy? We are joined by two of our most popular guests ever, IBM's Director of User Experience for Collaboration Solutions, Chris Paul, and ISW's International Man of Mystery, Matt Newman, to discuss a great new site for Notes users, designing for mobile, the new generation of One UI, why Ginny Womity has sparked a new focus on user experience in IBM, and much more. All coming up on This Week in Lotus.
This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. You can find this and other tech-related podcasts at techpodcast.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 105 of This Week in Lotus. We are here to discuss all things IBM Collaboration Solutions and Lotus Technology. I'm Stuart McIntyre. I'm joined by Darren Duke. Hello, Darren.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Yes, we have all three, I think, today. So, covering the globe.
Yes, and I said something last week about connections being 18 months overdue, and I got a bit of a pummeling for that. So I don't think it's 18 months overdue, but it is. So my apologies. I shouldn't have said that without any facts. It's over.
Excellent. Well done, Darren. Yes, a few months over, but probably not 18. So good stuff. We are joined this week by somebody from IBM and one of the business partners around the world. So let's kick off with the IBM, joined by Chris Paul. Hi there, Chris.
Hi, Stuart. Greetings.
Greetings. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. We had such positive feedback last time you were on. It's fantastic to have you back.
It's great to be here. Thanks for the invite.
No problem at all. So do you want to tell us what your job title is with IBM and what that encompasses?
Sure. I am the Director for User Experience for IBM Collaboration Solutions, and my team and I have responsibility for design, user research, information across the Collaboration Solutions portfolio of products.
That sounds like a pretty broad brief, so I imagine you've got quite a staff working for you?
Yeah, we have an incredibly talented, great staff of folks, so we have a good time every day.
Sounds wonderful. And are they mainly in Boston, or are they spread around the world?
Got them all over the globe.
Fantastic. So I'm sure you're on conference calls all times of the day and night.
Indeed.
So thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it, Chris. And also joined by one of the IBM champions from the other side of the world, from Australia, Matt Newman. How are you, Matt?
I'm excellent for a Friday evening, mate. How are you all?
Yes, we're good. We're good. Thank you so much for being back on the show again. Tell us who you work for, what you do.
I work for ISW, a premier partner in Australia, offices in Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne and Hobart, and we pretty much cover everywhere in Southeast Asia, and if it's got an IBM sticker on it, you can be sure that ISW deal with it. And of course, we're also involved with other activities, things like wildfire and the exceptional user adoption plug-in for IBM Connections Kudos Badges, which you're involved in as well, Stu.
Indeed, yeah, we're one of the resellers. But it's great to have you back on. You're sounding more and more like a marketeer every time I speak to you. You're so good at describing what ISW do. Good job, man.
The marketing team have done a really good job on educating me.
Very true. Well, good job on describing all of that. It's great to have you back on. So we're going to discuss once again, as we did last time you were on, Chris, sort of what your team really does for IBM, what user experience really means. So that conversation, which I think was on episode 40 of This Week in Lotus, so go back and listen to that, audience, if you want to cover that again. It was back in February last year. So I'm imagining a fair bit has changed since then with the rise of mobile and cloud and everything else. So has much changed with user experience inside Lotus since then?
So, Stuart, I think, there's been some pretty fundamental and I think fantastic changes for us inside of IBM. I mean, IBM historically is a technology company and has just done tremendously brilliant things over the 100 years that we've been in business. And rooted deep in our culture from the very beginning was a design sensibility that we applied to the very things that we made, back in the day making, meat cutters and typewriters and punch card machines, et cetera. As we moved into the technology phase and you know, where we now have, you know, a focus on software, on services and so forth, you know, understanding how design mentality needs to drive the things that we do every day in our current climate is, you know, I think really gaining a lot of attention inside of IBM at the highest levels. I mean, Ginni Rometty is our new CEO. She's just a fantastic leader and has really communicated very specifically to the business that she expects design focus to be one of the fundamental things we take forward to the next 100 years. So that sort of transformation, that sort of leadership has really driven a lot of focus on the things that I've cared deeply about for many years. So I'm very excited to be a part of it.
So is that a noticeable change that Ginni's brought to the game, Chris?
Absolutely. I think you guys will begin to see more of, you know, that transformation as the next wave of products ship out. You know, you'll see, you know, greater attention and focus on the things that we really, you know, that, you know, you've heard me talk about over the years. And so I've seen it. You know, I tell my team all the time, I've been at IBM since 95 and never has there been a focus on design, on the things that we're making every day as there is, has been in the last, you know, 18, 24 months. So it's just a fantastic time for us to be designers in IBM.
And last time you were on, Chris, you mentioned that you sort of looked up to Apple in some ways in terms of their industrial design and their focus on user experience. Do you think, you know, Ginni's views and maybe IBM's reaction is somewhat to do with Apple's rise? Do you think they've kind of forced the game up in terms of user experience?
Oh, Apple absolutely has. And I think, you know, when Ginni talks about her focus on design, she means a great deal more than just the product touch points that we have in our software products today. You know, she means to encompass, you know, that's a terribly important part of it. And, you know, we've got to get that part right. And, you know, that's part of my job. She also means customer experience generally. So our experience with sales, what it means to intersect with IBM. I interpret it in ways such as the information we put on our websites, right? Putting a design eye, adding design thinking to the information that we craft around the products, not just the product documentation, but, you know, the other bits that we create to help people adopt. I think, Stuart, one of the reasons you pulled me on today was talk about some of the stuff you've seen out there that we've done recently in that regard.
I think that's one of the areas that IBM has perhaps been given some criticism in the past, maybe by partners and perhaps customers as well. And this, sometimes the websites are quite hard to navigate and find useful information that really makes a difference to end users rather than technology folks. So should we jump onto that? I mean, there's a website that you've been working on, I know, the Experience Lotus Notes site. So do you want to cover what the aim for that was?
So we put this site together after doing an inventory of the different content sources that we have out there. And frankly, there's a lot of them. Right. There's lots of places to go to get information about our products, lots of places to go to find technical information, how-to information. But we saw a gap in terms of communicating directly to end users to provide them with the information they need to customize, to tailor, to make that notes experience precisely the best that it can be, given a modern expectation on email messaging capability. And so we went out, talked to a lot of people, talked to a lot of users, found the things that were most meaningful to them, and chose to highlight those on that site. And as I said earlier, it's really about curating, right? We're not going to have that be a dumping ground of, you know, the 500 best tips for notes. It's going to be a simple list that we keep updated that will provide users with a very concise, very clear set of guidelines and hints and tips that we think are most meaningful to them.
I think that's a fantastic idea. And something that's very obvious on the site is just what you said, the curation piece, because, you know, there's only 6 tips on there right now, but each of them are very clearly described, some really nice graphics, some, you know, some good comments from users and so on. And I think that's really appealing. And so I think you've done a really good job. Because what we've seen a little bit in the past is wikis tend to be the easiest way to do this stuff. But as you say, you just end up with loads and loads more content put in there all the time, and it's difficult to sort through and find out the most relevant pieces. Whereas this site seems to do a really good job of doing that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think you're right about wikis. They can often become, you know, pretty dense. We've also taken a hard look at what we're doing in wikis, and I'm really happy to say that the next drop you'll see from us has more of this same thinking. Looking at the design challenges, people have with information and crafting an experience in that wiki that satisfies, you know, those primary tasks. So in searchability, getting to the most relevant content, clearly knowing where you're at, you know, presenting that content in a more consumable fashion. These are all aspects of our current work on the wiki platform that we'll push out the second half of this year.
Chris, from your experience, and you said you got some feedback from users, are users expecting more of these short, quick sound bites, if you like, of information rather than a great big in-depth article that they have to troll through to get those one or two points that they're really interested in?
I think that's right, Matt. You know, I think we can all say that attention spans generally have dropped over the last 15 years or so. You know, as humans, we have, clamoring for our attention. So I do think it is a designer to respond to that. And I think you see that influence everywhere. You might even say that simplification movement that we've seen in the last few years around user interface has been, in some respects, a response to that. You know, not in a sense to make things, to make things simpler so that they can be used more efficiently, right? And so applying that sort of sensibility to information is a really hard thing to do. As we talked last time, getting to simple is extremely hard, right? But, you know, the path to do that, whether it's product design, it's user interface, or it's content, is the same. And it's about curation. It's about understanding what your user wants and applying design thinking and curating content to get to that essential.
So, Chris, I've been lucky enough to have been playing around with 8.54 in the beta phase, and I've seen quite a few of these little bites included on some of the new welcome screens. So is there a plan to roll more of this type of information into the product itself, and not just in notes, across products, for example, in connections?
So absolutely, Matt. You know, I've got a brilliant set of folks on the ID and the information architecture side working for me, and they have been pushing for multiple years now an agenda that they call progressive disclosure. And it's really about, you know, building into the user interfaces content that can be exposed when it's needed, you know, by the user. And, you know, this has been a pretty fundamental principle that we have been slowly but all, you know, surely working into all of our products, right? So what you're seeing in 8.54 with some of the hints and tips, what you're seeing, you know, within, you'll see in connections for some of the content strategies that we have there. Our intent, of course, is to make those interfaces as intuitive as possible. But when you need help, we're going to make that help available for you right there in context. Right. And, you know, that's a fundamental principle for us moving ahead on the content strategy.
The Discover page inside of 8.54 is beautiful.
Thank you. We're pretty pleased with it.
Yeah. Plus one on that. Chris, one really hard one. How do you do that without reinventing Clippy?
Please, no.
Are you trying to get me on a rant?
I think we all learn, lessons from Clippy, right? And I don't imagine he'll be making the rounds anytime soon. I mean, what's the most important difference, I think, there is, you know, we look to the user to guide us on what it is that they need. Right. Again, we apply extreme, focus to the details of the user interface, and then fold that help in a way that when a user is maybe stuck on a particular field or needs a little bit of a nudge, you know, they're asking for it. Right. And we're making it available through a series of patterns, you know, user experience patterns that are very predictable and consistently applied. So you always know help is just a little, hover or click away. So Clippy's not going to come around anytime soon, Matt. I rest assured.
Or the iPad version anyway.
And Matt, your photo appears on that Experience Latest Notes site as well in terms of a tip from you about message tracking and stuff. How did you get involved in that? Did somebody reach out to you and ask?
Yeah, actually, Chris sent out a little note and asked me to have a look at a few things. And I guess I was privileged enough to see a little bit of a preview of what they were working on. And it was I saw it as a fantastic idea, a really good way to reach out to the users. And as Chris has said, just give a couple of small little bites of information, easy to consume, something that, you know, the 140 character generation can glance at quickly, pick something up, consume it, benefit from it, and move on.
Something that I particularly liked in there is your tip's a good one, but also Ed Brill's, actually, you know, using permanent pen, which I have certainly never used in notes. Darren and Matt, I don't know how much you use it, but I'm sure that's something that many people have used notes for many years and not really got into setting preferences for that kind of thing.
It's always been in there. I've never used it. I accidentally change all my text to purple 18 point every now and again. But it is. It's one of the things that if you don't use it, I don't think you know about it. And there's tons of menus in there that, you know, even I don't go in. And I think one of the things that the site makes you do is go, oh, yeah, that's in there.
Yeah. Cool, Matt.
That's one of the things that I saw when Chris reached out. And Jennifer, who I had a conversation with, we were bouncing backwards and forwards. And while we were doing that, I was doing my normal reply without history thing, and she asked me why I was doing it, and that's where my tip actually came from. I showed Jennifer through, you know, a couple of screenshots, a couple of menu options, how you actually do the reply without history. If all you're doing is going backwards and forwards and having a very quick chat, when you're in conversation mode, you actually get that small precis of the first couple of sentences out of every email, and it's really easy to go through and quickly scan through a conversation without having to scroll up and down through an email that's got a whole heap of history sitting inside it.
The last thing I'll point out from that is, in terms of right down the bottom, there's a did you know. Everything in Lotus Notes is a database. Your email and contacts are both databases. You can even create application databases to keep track of documents for a project. That kind of thing is so intrinsic to Notes, and we all know it so well because of, you know, what we've been doing with it over the years. But that's the kind of thing that is just very easily stated, but actually would make a massive difference to the average user if they come across that and learn what that means in terms of why it's set up the way it is. So I think it's a really good site, and I'll be interested to see how it develops over time.
Are we going to see the phrase database reintroduced into the Lotus Notes vernacular?
Are we going to see database reintroduced to the Lotus Notes vernacular?
In yes. Every place of application, right, Matt?
In the right context, you know, we need to call things that make sense to the people who are, you know, reading it or, you know, manipulating it or dealing with it. And, you know, I do think, as Stuart, as you said, that it's important for people to understand that Notes has a tremendous amount of power behind it. And even, you know, the end user who just uses it for messaging and calendaring, understanding that there's a great deal of power there is an important message for us to communicate to them. But, you know, frankly, they don't necessarily care what those things are called, right? They see it as, you know, some big server sitting behind closed doors that is taking care of their calendaring and messaging. And we want to help them get, you know, what's important from the experience that we can provide for Notes to them. We want to help them access it. And so our focus on these things is going to be, you know, pushing the messages out to those audiences in a way that they understand and can identify with.
Okay, and one of the obvious questions that comes to my mind is, are you planning to do this for other products as well? Is there going to be an experience same time, an experience connections in the same kind of way?
So we do have one in plan for connections for. We're going to look very selectively at what we do here because it is a pretty intensive activity. I think with the feedback we've gotten so far, with the good, the positive vibes that we've gotten from the community, that will certainly fuel us to do more of it. But it is a pretty exhaustive effort, right, to really do it. So, you know, doing that and, you know, our product design and content duties within the products is something I want to be extremely careful with because I want to keep that bar really high. But, yes, we intend to keep building on it. You'll see updates to what we have on the Experience Notes sites when we actually push 8.5.4 out the door because I want to advertise and get people to see some of the new things that are coming out and some of the new visual design and usability enhancements that we're driving there.
Excellent. And Matt, you do a lot of end user training, I know. I mean, do you see yourself showing this to end users that you're putting through training courses?
Yeah, in the last couple of weeks since this has been introduced, I've shown these a couple of these sites to some users that we've done some training for, and they really liked the fact that you could go to one spot and just see a couple of really quick tips, and they're hoping to see more of it.
I think one of the things, Matt, too, that, you know, we do have a set of resource cards at the bottom, which we're pretty happy with, too, that, you know, show more of the user interface, get into more of a step-by-step task list on how to achieve some things in Node. So those are things that users can print out, you know, put on their desk, pass around, and so forth. And, you know, we'll be doing a few more of those as we move ahead as well. So, you know, keep the feedback coming in on this. I mean, I want to hear from you guys relative to, you know, what resonates with, you know, the customers and users that you're dealing with every day.
Yeah, just on that, mate, well done on those. And I can tell you that they have already been printed out and distributed in a couple of sites where I've gone and done some training recently. So kudos. Excellent.
And I'm just creating an email with it in now. That's why I was quiet.
My one piece of feedback is just it would be great to have a shorter domain name. For, you know, and I know that's always an issue for IBM, but it'd be great to just have a, you know, a one-liner.com that we can just send out to people and say, go here for this kind of information. So I don't know whether that's anything that can be improved over time. But if not, just Google Experience Lotus Notes. It's the first thing that comes up.
You could do learn.lotus/notes, and that will work.
Learn.lotus.com/.
No, yes, sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
I have a few suggestions, too.
Let's hear it, Darren.
One is, I love the idea at the bottom where you've got user learning widget and you can drag it over, but there's nowhere that tells me how to get the widget toolbar if I don't already have it turned on.
It's a good catch. I'll take a look at that and see if we can't provide some information in that regard.
Because I think that looks beautiful. If you just drag that to your sidebar and bang, you got a new user or an Outlook migration user, you've got it already in there. I think that would be an excellent idea. And then the second one is kind of somewhat related. It was what you said earlier about making sure that the content we deliver on the web, be it documentation, wikis, or whatever, has a pretty good design around it. And one of the things that kind of has been frustrating me lately is it looks like whenever IBM changed their backend system, the links I have for tech notes no longer work. And so I just think there needs to be some thought about, okay, if we put out a link to a tech note, that tech note could last for 10 years, maybe more even. Some of them still go back to R4 that are true today. And it would be nice, you know, it defeats the whole bookmarking dog earing philosophy. If every time I put a dog ear in and come back 6 months later, that URL no longer works because it's been moved to some other place inside of IBM.com or developer domain.
I'm not sure poor Chris can help with that one. It's a very valid point, and I've had that same issue as well. We should probably report that to the webmaster somewhere and get them to put in some redirects. Yeah, certainly, I think as time goes on, you need to make sure that you keep that referenceability going on. And Chris, one of the kind of questions I had for you is, you know, I kind of started it early on in terms of the changing way that people access information, you know, and access application data as well, is that it seems like we're having a massive shift towards tablets and mobile devices. And that must create its own issues in terms of how you design user interfaces, because suddenly it's, you know, you're not necessarily going to have a, you know, a widescreen monitor with loads of screen estate to display this stuff. And also, you know, we're going to have different kinds of input devices. And so, How do you design your apps so that they work just as well as, say, native apps as they do as mobile web apps, as you know, browser apps? It must be pretty challenging to do.
Well, it certainly is challenging, Stuart. And I think, you know, one of the things that we did about, you know, I think right around the time we last talked, is we formulated a team within the design area specifically for doing mobile across the portfolio. Right. You know, and previous to that, we had tried a couple different models on how to design for mobile. We had, you know, design for mobile happening within the product teams themselves. So the guys who were designing connections also designed the connections application. You know, we tried, you know, a couple different things there. But what we found is that, you know, with the quick pace change, you know, the pace of change in the mobile world with new devices coming out, with, you know, operating system updates and so forth, we really needed to build up some extreme expertise in design for mobile. And so we decided to commission a team to do that. That's made all the difference, right? So we have a team of designers who are working across the portfolio to design those mobile solutions. You know, much of, you know, and when I talk about one UI, I really mean a set of guidelines and really institutional knowledge that we have within ICS design around the patterns and so forth. And so we've extended that to include the mobile patterns. And, you know, it's been, again, it's made all the difference. And so I think the last time we talked, you guys heard me tell you how great I thought, you know, this, you know, revolution in mobile computing has been for design, because it has forced designers to think about, you know, absolutely about the context of use, and the simplification becomes abundantly clear of what you need to achieve to enable users to complete tasks and to get things done. And I have a tremendous interest and passion in pushing that simplification and mentality into, you know, not just the mobile devices and applications we ship there, but also into the web and the desktop applications. Right. I think there's tremendous benefit in looking at it, in that manner.
And I was going to say, I think people say mobile, and really, I think the term should be mobility. And what's kind of interesting is that encompasses a laptop with a 17-inch screen, a laptop with a 15-inch screen, an iPad with a 10-inch screen, an iPad allegedly with a 7-inch screen, an iPhone with a 4-inch screen. So you've got all of these different form factors. And I think each one has its own benefits and also own pitfalls.
Yep. But, you know, what makes a successful mobile app, you know, I would argue, is what makes a successful app generally. And we've kind of gotten away, you know, as an industry, you know, I think we're doing much better now because there's been such a focus on simplification and designing to the essentials in the last few years. But there's a lot of folks out there who still quite, you know, don't quite get it. And they're designing airplane cockpit systems, you know, that are hard to for users to navigate around. And again, it goes back to what we were saying earlier. It's about curating. And what are the tasks you're going to support? When are you going to support them? How can you lead users through a flow that is both meaningful and intuitive? And mobile makes that really important to understand. If you don't get it in mobile, you'll fail, right? And so we're taking what we learn about mobile, what we learn about how people use our applications in mobility environments, and applying that in desktop and web generally.
So Chris, can you do me a favor? The team that's behind the Android tablet Lotus Notes client app, can you please go and buy them a beer? Because that app is just absolutely fantastic.
I'll absolutely do that. And they're one of my favorite teams. So, and I love all my teams equally, but the mobile guys got a special place in my heart because they really have risen to the challenge.
So, all right. So here's my question around that. It is a brilliant app. How hard is it to try and build a functional app like you have with the Android tablet client that still remains simple and intuitive?
And just to clarify, Matt, you mean the Traveler, right?
Absolutely. Sorry, the Lotus Notes Traveler Android tablet application. Hey, there's an IBM product name for you.
It's extremely hard to get these things right, and it's harder than anyone, you know, thinks it is. You know, again, you know, I'm sure you guys have read the Steve Jobs biography. You know, getting to simple is not an easy thing, and it's painful, right? Our tendency, especially as engineers, technologists, is to look at problems and make them more complicated, right? We think about edge cases. We think about, you know, well, this user over here might do X, Y, and Z, and what effect does that have? And before you know it, you're building an application that is accommodating edge cases and not 80% of, you know, the 80% of the tasks that are out there. And it's a really difficult pitfall to avoid, especially when you got a lot of smart people who, you know, are really creative in their thinking about the problem space that we're in. So it just requires an extreme vigilance every single day to the essentials. And one of the ways we do it is, from a design perspective, we declare upfront a set of essential use cases, and we craft what we call a shared vision, which says this release is about getting these things done. And, you know, moving features, functions, capability into that shared vision after the fact takes, you know, an act of God, right? So it's a very hard, disciplined process in order to create simple things. So it's, you know, I'm constantly learning how to do it better. And we still have a ways to go.
And something that I know Darren and I have both kind of congratulated IBM on, in recent months is your sort of kind of listening ability, you know, both through blogs and also through things like Lola or Leadership Alliance conferences and so on. You do a lot of listening to your top customers and partners and trying to satisfy their needs. But that must also give you some challenges in terms of, having to take all those demands and requests and actually then formulate the ones that actually are the right things to do in products. I mean, you know, you mentioned Steve Jobs a couple of times, that there's a quote I just read today, actually, you can't just ask customers what they want and then try to give it to them. By the time you get it built, they'll want something new. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with those requests from customers and kind of make them happen in a reasonable time and also choose the right ones to implement?
Well, the thing I constantly tell my team is, you know, it is our job to listen to customers. It's our jobs to understand the business challenges that they have and the difficulties that they're having from a technology perspective and where we can help. But it isn't the job of a customer to design a product. You know, that's, you know, my team's job. It's, you know, our engineer's job. And so taking that input, synthesizing it into a plan that can scale, that can perform, that can, you know, essentially productize it is what the discipline of design and product development is about, right? So if we were to just, you know, create, you know, and add features and capabilities based on, you know, customer input without a more holistic set of thought processes around what effect that has downstream, or, you know, is that the healthiest thing to do from a system perspective? You know, we would get ourselves into, you know, pretty deep waters in not a good way. So, you know, again, that is the discipline of product design. That's what we signed up to do when we took these jobs. And, you know, that's an important part of you know, our daily routines.
So dealing with someone like me must be an absolute bloody nightmare.
We love it. We love it.
Sounds good. And something that we're seeing come through a lot, Chris, is in terms of the One UI theme, which obviously, you know, it's been evolving over the last, 5 years since One UI was kind of first made available. And, it seems like the latest iteration is, we're seeing Connections 4 and in the Social Edition 854 Notes client as well. It's in terms of this very new sort of stark black and white look and feel. What was the rationale behind that? Because it's interesting. It seems, you know, from the announcement this week, as if Office is going the same way from Microsoft, it seems to be going back to a much more binary kind of black and white look and feel rather than something more colorful.
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, I look at some of the Office stuff that's coming out there and I'm not impressed. I mean, it almost looks like a wireframe. Right. You know, I think what we've done, is with One UI. I mean, again, One UI has got a lot of dimensions to it. A lot of One UI is about the patterns of interaction that we have within the products. And, you know, very careful attention to detail around, you know, how we construct, you know, the mechanical parts, you know, molecular, pieces of the products, you know, forms, et cetera. But visual design is an important part of that. And, you know, I'm very forward about that. I mean, you know, you look at, you know, the industry's, you know, luxury goods or cars or homes or whatever, how the aesthetics of something count for something. And you expect when you pay a lot of money for something that there's going to be careful consideration on all those elements. And so we take the visual design of what we do very seriously. But we also temper that with one of our design principles, which is, you know, a product is about the content, not about the UI, right? So we want that UI to recede. We want it to get into the back. We want it to be, you know, feel as if it's supporting you, and not calling attention to itself. Right. And I think what we've done, you know, especially relative to 854 is we've taken that attitude. We've softened it a little bit to drive some aesthetics into, the equation, but have given you a more modern, and I think a much more than usable, interface as a result. I mean, there's been studies that have shown that, you know, people respond better and find things more usable when they're well designed from a visual perspective. Right. And I think there's a lot of great stuff about these products, and I want to put the time and the attention into the refinement of those visuals to reflect all the work that the engineers have done over the last, you know, 15 years on the many things that we ship.
One of the things I'm liking is consistency across the board. You know, iNotes and Notes are coming together in terms of look and feel. Yeah, Connections is fitting in really well as well. Do you see that rolling out across the other products as well, same time and quicker, heading to the same look and feel as well?
Yep, absolutely. You know, we're working to make updates on all the things that we have the opportunity to do so that we can provide more of that family consistency. And I'm hoping, you know, that what you guys are seeing in that too is more of a connection to, you know, the big Galactic IBM brand expression. You know, because that's been another goal of mine, is to connect our products to, you know, how IBM brands itself. And, you know, you look at our products and you say, that's an IBM branded product, right? And so, you know, Stuart, we're absolutely looking to take, you know, those attitudes and that discipline to every corner of the portfolio.
And there are a couple of nice little blue hints in 854 Social Edition. As you go and click on things, they turn a nice, lovely shade of blue in the background.
One of the things, you know, I've fed back into the design partner program, I know we have to be careful about NDAs and that kind of thing, is I'd love to be able to change those very easily. So just in the UI, just be able to say my corporate color is red or whatever, and just have those highlights change in that way. It'd be a fantastic thing to be able to do. But you're right. I think there are some definitely, you know, some really nice highlights in that black and white look and feel as well. I certainly think it's really appealing. And the feedback I've had from customers that I've been working with on Connections 4 is really, really positive. One of the things that comes to mind for me is that customers always want to customize. You know, they always want to stamp their own, you know, corporate look and feel on what you do. How does that kind of make you feel as a design guru, Chris? I imagine, you know, you spend years kind of getting your designers to craft something as nice as the new One UI, and then customers sort of want to change it or make it look, you know, different. Is that somehow sort of uncomfortable for you, or is that just kind of part of the nature of building enterprise software?
No, it's definitely part of the nature. Now, you know, ideally, I would love it that, you know, when you went to customize one of our themes, you cried a few tears because it was so grand and you hate to lose it, right? And, you know, we're gonna get there. But, you know, it's fundamentally a part of what customers come to us and expect. They want the mechanics of the software that we make to fit into the environments that they exist in. I mean, our customers spend a lot of money on their brands, right? And the manifestation of those brands. An important audience for that brand expression is internal. And so I want to be a company that provides software to be a carrier of what is important about your company values as well. And, you know, visuals sometimes get, you know, bad. You know, focusing on visuals sometimes gets, you know, looked down upon. And I think it's a fundamental piece of a strategy that, you know, we've got to support, in the things that we make. Customization is a key part of that, Stuart.
I think it's kind of it's a long road, because I think the feature sets and the UIs are so disparate that it has taken a couple of years. But like Stuart said, I think notes and iNotes look the same. You know, quicker, and connections are starting to all be one UI by hopefully the end of this year. And I think it just makes it a whole lot more better solution experience, which I think Microsoft has always kind of done. They've made everything look the same so you didn't really know. And I think it just makes the user not realize and not have to care, what am I in? But like you said, the experience has to kind of guide you to use it in the way that you would design. And I just think it's a hard thing to tackle, but I think IBM have done a pretty good job of it. It's not finished yet, but everything they've done so far has led from what we had to now a kind of Vulcan-ish experience coming in the next releases. And I just think it's all good stuff.
Actually, you bring up a good point, Darren, in terms of, you know, we've spent a lot of hours on this podcast talking about Project Vulcan and talking about how IBM has kind of gradually evolved all the products towards Project Vulcan. What's next, Chris? What, you know, because I get the impression with the latest products you're going to ship, you're pretty much at what Project Vulcan represented. Is there going to be a new Project XYZ that takes you into the next sort of 3 or 5 years?
Project Romulan.
Yeah, we're not fans of the Romulans. Those are you're a little too aggressive. So every spring, my team kicks off what we call our charrette season. And our charrette is kind of a, you know, design project, 6 to 8 weeks in time. And I give the designers, you know, some loose assignments and say, go off and scratch your head, drink coffee and stay up late and think about these things and draw stuff. And so we have a tremendous set of things that, you know, I'm really excited about that we're looking forward to, you know, talking more about in the future. I mean, you know, we've got some really exciting initiatives underway that I think are really going to demonstrate, you know, both the design thinking that we're applying to our products, that we understand, you know, consumability, we understand user adoption as a fundamental part of this, we understand and are aligned with what Ginny wants IBM to be, And I can't wait to talk to you guys more about those things and show you what we're doing. Right. I'm just, like I said, this is a great time to be doing design at IBM. It's exhausting, right? Because we were looking at everything. But it is, you know, a great time. I've never felt the focus before in my career. It's just tremendous focus. So you're going to see some exciting things coming up, guys. I can't wait to show you.
Time frame? Hint, hint, cough, cough. Lotus Sphere, maybe?
We might show you a few things at Lotus Sphere. We'll see.
When you're sending your people off to do their shreds and have their late night coffee, that part of the design process, is that coming up with ideas for products, or is that creating a design to fit in with an idea that's coming out of engineering?
It can be either of those. You know, we've got close ties with the research folks as well. So, you know, maybe there's an idea that's sparked through research. It could be sparked through engineering. We've got a really talented user research team, and they're constantly talking to users and customers and understanding what their challenges are. Working closely with our colleagues in the strategy organization. So, you know, identifying sort of hot topics that we really feel, you know, there's some fertile ground there to explore, and that the attention of a designer, for, you know, 1.5 to 2 months could really begin to manifest some actionable direction. And so that's what we do. And it's, you know, it's an exciting time for us. And again, that's pretty tiring, but it's, you know, that's the sort of thing, you know, good designers thrive and live to do that kind of thing. Cause I call it blank sheet design, right? Here's an idea. Go off and, you know, come back with your interpretation of what we should do moving ahead. And, you know, we get surprising number of insights coming out of those, you know, loose exercises.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I can't wait to see what comes next. I think you guys have done a great job on the latest products, you know, that are going to come to release before the end of the year. And, it's interesting to see what comes after that. Yeah. And I saw, so Luis Benitez, I think, was blogging earlier on this week in terms of what, asking for suggestions as to what comes after Connections 4. So it must just be like a treadmill that you go, you know, the minute you kind of get close to releasing one product, you're automatically thinking about the next one or the one after that. Is there a feeling that you ever kind of reach your goals, Chris? Because I imagine you must always be kind of thinking about what comes next. Do you ever get the kind of sense of satisfaction that you've delivered on something really great? Or is it always just feeling like that there's more road to follow because you've got to get to whatever comes next?
Every time I interview a new designer, you know, to join the team, you know, I have this conversation with them, and I said, if you're someone who likes this, you know, the feeling of, you know, putting a piece on press and getting a printed piece back and, you know, feeling like you're done and you've accomplished something and, you know, everything's good and now it's time to move on to something else, this is not the job for you, right? You know, the cross that we bear is we're never really done, right? You know, the job of a designer is to find the things that need to be made more efficient, that could be simplified, to constantly have a critical eye. And that can be very frustrating at times, but, you know, we channel that in a positive way within our team. Yes, we do, you know, take a couple minutes and pat ourselves on the back on a release, but by the time something goes out, you know, we're already deep into the next release. So we're looking, you know, as I said, you know, we've got the spring charrettes that, you know, are behind us now. We've identified the things we're taking forward. We're looking, you know, heavily beyond Connections 4 already. So, you know, but that's what we do, and we love it. We wouldn't change it for, you know, anything.
And one more question for me on this, and then we'll move on to some other news. We've obviously seen some folks leave IBM, as always happens in large organizations. People come, people go, all that kind of stuff. But with Mary Beth and also, I know Marty Moore also left from the Connections design team last year. Do you kind of encourage people in your team to come through and then become better known in the community? I mean, are you suggesting to staff that you have that they should be presenting at Lotusphere and some of the lugs and that kind of thing so they become better known?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we actually have, this year, a lot of focus on how it is that our team is reaching out and becoming more social with our community of users and so forth. And, you know, I think you'll see even more and more of that as the year progresses here. We have a UX blog out there now. I don't have the URL handy, but Stuart, I'll hand that over to you. One of the ways we're trying to make ourselves more visible and to gather more of that insight is through more regular blogging. There's a lot of people on our team. We had one of our UI developers talk about color contrast for accessibility in UI development. We had another visual designer talk about what does it mean to design and create Retina capable icons, right? So there's a lot of different topics happening out there in our UX blog. So that's one of the avenues by which my team is reaching out and looking to make a difference.
Fantastic. And then thank you for encouraging them. It's always good to get to know these people through social networks and also obviously in person as well when we go to some of these events. Now, moving on to some of the other news of the week, it seems to have been a week for quarterly announcements on profits and that kind of thing, financial results. Matt, I know you've been following both the Microsoft and the IBM results this week. And any thoughts on those?
Interesting week from the two big technology giants. So IBM had quite a good quarter and Microsoft appears to have had not quite a good quarter. Darren, what was your take on that?
Google had a fantastic quarter. But that being said, I'm calling it now. Microsoft is the next RIM.
That's an interesting one, Darren. And you called RIM right all those months and years ago. But Microsoft, I get the feeling on a cusp. The results haven't been good. Having said that, some of the press coverage has actually suggested that they were quite positive. It was just in the advertising business they struggled last quarter. But you kind of get the impression that they're trying to do some exciting stuff with Windows Phone and with the tablets and stuff. But their traditional business, the on-premise based Windows and Office and so on, is certainly going to change fairly fundamentally over the next year or so. So I'm interested to see how they deal with that, particularly with Ballmer at the head. You've got a feeling that, I certainly have a feeling that Ballmer won't be there in 12 months' time, but I guess that remains to be seen.
So, guys, here's the serious question, and not actually hanging it on Microsoft in a derogatory manner at all. When was the last time you actually saw anything innovative come out of that organization?
Probably never. I mean, Microsoft, I've said this before on the podcast, they're the technology equivalent of Taiwan. they take other people's ideas and make them cheaper and faster and ostensibly, according to the user population, better. So they're not innovative all by themselves. And I think right now they're in a position where they're trying to buy companies that gets them some limelight, but I'm not quite sure how we're going to plug it in.
Like
it's basically
Yammer deal.
Yeah, like both of us, Skype and Yammer, right? It's a bit dodgy on both fronts about how we're going to do this. But if you're a SharePoint centric shop, I think you're locked into that stack for the next decade. There's no way you're getting out, and they're just going to keep piling on top of it. And I think that's where Microsoft needs to focus is. I don't think they're going to see the growth year on year that people have been expecting, but they will. The cash cow is Office and SharePoint, and to a certain extent Windows, but I think that's disappearing very quickly. And a lot of that, I think, is due to Apple, not because of people moving to Mac, but because Apple forced Microsoft to look at the upgrade price for Windows, and it's no longer a $150, $170 upgrade. It's now a $50 upgrade. So I think that is a bit of a sign of a desperation. And I think Microsoft, as we know it, are probably going to be around for decades to come. But I think that they're going to be stuck in the 1990s.
It's going to be interesting to see. And we'll have a link to the IBM results as well. The IBM results were pretty good. Income up 6% and so on. So I think they're doing a pretty good job across the whole of the business. I'm sure Chris probably can't comment on it from his position. But, it seems like the results, particularly in Software Group, were, flat to slight growth. So, again, doing okay. And I think, once you include currency issues and so on, then they look pretty positive. So we'll have links to both the Microsoft and IBM results in the show notes. One of the other things is Windows 8 seems to be coming closer and closer. And Matt, I know this is something you've said in the past, but it seems like the Notes workspace is appearing in just another form in terms of Metro.
That was a nice little tweet that we threw out this afternoon. The interesting thing, of course, of being interested in technology, I've run up the betas, I've downloaded the previews of Office 2013 just to have a look, and it's interesting how Apple took that workspace philosophy and used it as the launch pad for iOS. And now that appears to be the same direction that Microsoft are heading with the new desktop.
Yeah,
which, by the way, isn't that far different from what Canonical have done with Ubuntu.
There you go, they're copying again, see? it seems like chiclets are all the rage after all this time. Who'd have thought? A couple of other tiny bits of news. First of all, congratulations to Paul Mooney and Gab Davis and many others who were involved. Team Studio, I guess, who sponsored it, who were involved in the tweet up that took place this week. I saw a huge number of tweets coming through when that was happening UK time. In the evening, early on this week. So, congrats to them for running that. I think that'll probably be repeated again in the future. And also, UK Lug sessions have been announced. So, if you're interested in coming to the UK Lotus User Group, that's taking place sometime in September in Cardiff. All the sessions are now on the website, so check that out at uklug.info. So that brings us to the end of our topics. Let's go around and just quickly ask for a tip from each of us. Darren, do you want to kick us off?
Yes, I was lamenting right before the podcast started that I didn't have a tip. And then voila, as if by magic, in came my daily, or sometimes thrice daily, Memo Lane emails. And Memo Lane, I think Ed blogged about it probably 2 years ago when it was in early beta, and at the time I signed up. And basically what Memo Lane does is it goes back and finds your social media posts. I only use Twitter, so that's the only one I know, but I think it also works in Facebook and Google+. And it sends you what you said a year ago, what you said 2 years ago, what you said 3 years ago, all of that. And it does kind of make me laugh every time I get my email, the Memo Lane email showing me my tweets. It makes me chortle on the inside. Some were just plain wrong. Some were bad. But some were actually quite clairvoyant.
Rim.
All the ones about Rim. All the ones about Rim.
Excellent. So that's at memolane.com. And Chris, do you have a tip for us?
Of course, you should visit the Experience Notes website for all you need to know about getting the optimal experience in Notes.
Fantastic. Thank you. So that's at learn.lotus.com/notes. So we've got that link in the show notes as well. And Matt, do you have a tip?
Of course. Leading in from the design team's work that they've been doing recently. For those of you with a Lotus Notes client, over on the right-hand side of the screen is your RSS feed reader in Notes. And if you click the button in there to subscribe to the preset feeds, you will get the Lotus Notes 8 tips feed, which comes straight off the IBM UX team's blog. And in the last few weeks, there've been a series of really great podcasts explaining some really great features about the Lotus Notes client.
Fantastic, great tip. And mine is a new web-based application called SoundGecko, which I only discovered this morning. But what that does is basically you give it a URL to a website, and it goes away and turns that into a audio transcription. So it's computer read, so you may like it or not based on that. But it basically converts it to speech, and you can then just download it and stick it on your iPhone, iPod, you know, whatever, Android device, and listen to it, obviously, on your way home or wherever it is you're traveling or mowing the lawn or whatever else. So I found it really useful already for a couple of things I've downloaded, quite long articles that I'm just not going to get a chance to read instead of playing while I'm working. So give that a try, soundgecko.com. So we'll just quickly one more time go around the table and just find out how people can be found online. So, Darren, where do people find you?
blog.darrenduke.net for technical stuff, and Darren Duke, all one word, on Twitter for my 140-character rants. This week about Dell, but actually Dell made something really cool, which is a server room that's in a container that can be dropped into military operations. It really is kind of sweet. I know what I want for Christmas now. Hint, hint, cock off, Lisa.
At least you'll be thrilled by that. And Chris, where do people track you down?
You can find me on Twitter at cpaul, C-P-A-U-L.
Awesome. And once again, we thank you so much for coming on the show, Chris. You always give us some really insights in terms of the process. So thank you very much for giving up your time today.
Great for being here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Always a pleasure. And Matt, where do people find you?
Matt Newman, just about everywhere. That's Matt with one T, mattnewman.com for the blog. And don't forget isw.net.au for all things connections, kudos badges, user adoption.
Awesome. And I mentioned UK Lug, everyone. Is it true you're coming over this year?
I have a session accepted for UK Lug, so I'm really looking forward to heading over and catching up with everyone in Cardiff in September.
Awesome.
And doesn't matter whether you're an international man of mystery or a foxy lady of collaboration, Lotus Notes, yeah, baby, yeah.
I can't recall ever seeing Foxy Lady of Collaboration on anyone's business cards, but now I have to check closely.
Awesome. It's going to be great to have you back over in the UK. Make sure you bring your raincoat if you're heading to Cardiff in September. It'll be great to have you over here. And I can be found on Twitter at Stuart McIntyre, on the new blog at stuart-mcintyre.com. So this was This Week in Lotus. I hope you enjoyed it. Please do leave us some comments, comment on Twitter or on the blog. It's fantastic to hear from you about this show, particularly if you love what Chris shared. So until next week, this was This Week in Lotus. Bye.
All opinions expressed during this podcast are those of the participants only and do not necessarily represent those of their employer.
How Thanks, cool Chris. Would it be to have a tactical mobile data center on the back of a truck?
All right. Chris, one last thing, buddy. I have to ask you, and it was on the show notes. So you declared last time you were on that you're a bit of an Apple fanboy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how have you done in the last 18 months in producing beautiful design?
Well, I think we've done pretty well. So we've got, as I said, one of the key components for us has been a leadership focus on this at the highest levels. And that has unlocked a lot of gates for the team to really focus and then to deliver that focus to end users. So you guys are going to see, and I know Matt, you're already starting to see some of it, but it's only going to increase dramatically from here. So it's a great time to be doing the work that we're doing.